guys, welcome back to another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. Today, former NFL lineman and current NFL analyst Jeff Schwartz joins me to break down what happened to the Chiefs in their catastrophic loss to the Bengals and how the Rams finally overcame their losing streak and beat Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers. But first, wanted to quickly tell you about another podcast, and that is The Right Time with Bomani Jones, which is now three times a week. This podcast brings you the latest from technology, music, and the very best analysis of games across all sports, plus a community of friends, including a guy I'm not a big fan of named Dominique Foxworth for Foxworth Fridays. There's also two other shows you can listen to, but if you want Dominique in your life, listen to Foxworth Fridays with Bomani Jones. That's right, The Right Time with Bomani Jones, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts, and Monday and Wednesday episodes are also available on ESPN's YouTube channel.
All right, here's Jeff Schwartz talking about the conference championship games. All right, joining me now, here as promised, on the Bill Barnwell Show. He's been on the show before, and I wanted to have him on, not just for his studied, nuanced, thoughtful NFL analysis. And I hate to say this, Jeff, also someone who has dealt with a Chiefs collapse in the playoffs in the past. Unfortunately, a man who survived the Chiefs-Colts playoff game from, what year was that, 2011?
2013.
Wow, almost a decade ago. A man who has dealt with it before, gotten through it, lived to tell the tale. It is my friend, Jeff Schwartz. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good. I mean, I'm better than the Chiefs offense the second half on Sunday. I'll tell you that. So, off to a good start for the week. But yes, I was. And funny, I had forgotten about that 2013 game. I immediately recalled, you know, the Titans victory in the playoffs when they were down 21-3. Yep. Because that kind of paralleled the 21-3 game, and it was a home game and all that. And yeah, I'd even forgot that 2013 happened until about 4 hours later. I was like, oh, wait, I was happened before. And unfortunately, that's happened a lot with Andy Reid. And I love Andy Reid, man, but there's been some bad collapses under his watch.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, a few games come to mind. I'm not sure there's probably an Eagles game in the mix I'm not thinking of, but, you know, I thought of that Colts game, and granted, a little different. You know, that was a crazy game. You guys lost so many players to injuries along the way. You were down to, like, third stringers, you know, catching and running with the football by the time you got to the fourth quarter of that game. That wasn't the case here. The stars, you know, the guys, the Hills, the Kelseys were still there. And I think the Titans game was so interesting because that was, if I'm remembering correctly, the last game of the Alex Smith era. And I think, you know, it kind of felt like, okay, well, we're not going to have that happen again because now we have Patrick Mahomes. And so we don't have to worry about the offense just shutting down for a half. And yet we got to this game, and after being, I mean, incredible, they were unstoppable in the first half of that game. That last, you know, the final play of the first half, they come up short. And then from that point forward, their offense was basically kaput. Like, it was abysmal for the entirety of the second half until that final drive, and they throw the interception in overtime and lose that game. So, Jeff, now that you've had a couple of days to digest things, to kind of look at what's happened, I mean, let's just start with the, you know, the sort of big picture thing here. What happened? Why did the Chiefs go from looking like an offensive juggernaut to, you know, the Bears in that game against the Browns? What happened to this offense?
Well, there's a couple answers. One is that this is what their season was, right? Mm-hmm. Their season was they look unstoppable and they look mediocre to downright bad in the middle of games, the middle of seasons. And a lot of us that watch the team, and I obviously root for the team, thought, like, you know, the good outweighs the bad. And for the most part, I mean, they won 12 games. It wasn't like it was a terrible season.
Right.
It just came back at the worst time. And the best way for me to describe it, I think, on Sunday is Pat Mahomes had the yips. Like, there's no other reason. There's no other earthly reason why he stopped being aggressive. I mean, like, okay, the last play, the first half. Okay. Like, he had a bad play. But up until that point, they had gained every possible yard. They were on right. They had gained every single yard possible up until that drive. They were averaging over 8 yards a play. They had 21 points. Mm-hmm. Okay, you had a bad play. Like, whatever, go in the locker room, come back out, score. Game's 28-10. It's over. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't happen that way. And it wasn't just the drop eight. I mean, Mahomes missed two running backs just in the flat. The passes he had thrown in the first half, just fine. And there's a lot of focus, and you put out the video, I think it was very good, about, you know, that third and nine. I think JT O'Sullivan, school as well. And it's like, there were two guys open, and then also Pringle was open again on a secondary reaction play. And like, those are throws Mahomes makes all the time. Like, there's not a doubt, like, oh, Travis Kelce has one step on a linebacker. Okay, cool. I'll throw it in there. And it felt like everything that had gone, that kind of the negatives of Mahomes, right? The footwork, some footwork issues, a little bit of timing concerns, right? He's not always the most rhythmic passer. Yeah. It all happened in that same, in the same half. And all that being said, right, first and five at the 5 yard line, need 5 yards, and all this is forgotten about. He gets over it most likely, comes back in the Super Bowl and plays really well. And I know that Bengals fans are very upset that Bengals, you know, they're not getting as much credit as they deserve, but I don't know what there is to deserve when you just drop eight into coverage. Like, it wasn't like it was some, it wasn't simulated pressures. It wasn't that the defensive line started dominating. Chiefs were averaging 6 yards a carry. You know, I have said that they should have run the ball more, and it's not really about just running the ball. In my opinion, it's about getting your confidence back. So when things are going poorly in games, I think one way to get your confidence back, if you have a good team, you can't just do this if you have a terrible offensive line, but you just run the ball three times in a row for a first down. And you just say, you know what, offensive line, you do this for us. You get us a first down. And it makes the whole team feel better. It really does. I don't believe in momentum. I believe in confidence, right? And it makes everyone just like, oh, okay, all right, we're back. Like, and then you hit a play action pass, or you have a bootleg or a screen, and boom, chunk play. And you kind of get back in the rhythm of things. And the Chiefs are running the ball really well. And I would have liked to see acknowledgement of like, hey, this is sort of not working. Maybe we should try something else just for a drive. I mean, like, not, I'm saying that had to be your game plan, but there was just never any adjustment. And I understand the way that, you know, the Andy Reid is thinking, right? Like, this is Pat Mahomes. What are we, why would we change what we're doing? But it just didn't work in that half. And it's something we're going to have to live down for a while. And what makes it tough if you're a Chiefs fan is, I just think with the AFC quarterbacks, like, it's hard to win every year. And this is an opportunity for them to play a Rams team or Niners team, but a Rams team that's not perfect. They're very good. But they have a quarterback that sometimes can't be trusted. And that can lead to interceptions in a playoff game. And obviously can help you win a Super Bowl. It's just hard to get back here, in my opinion, and just say, oh, it's going to happen again next year. So I was disappointed to see that, but I just think they had the yips, man. This Mahomes just, he lost it for half.
Yeah, it felt that way. And you know, it's not like he physically couldn't do it. It just felt like, you know, there was some hesitation. Like, it felt like maybe after that interception where, you know, it's B.J. Hill, a defensive lineman you don't expect to be in your throwing lane. But Trey Hendrickson, who dropped off in coverage on that play, was actually like the one sim pressure they ran, I think, was that interception, where maybe that caused him to hitch a bit, or maybe alter his throw a bit, or be a little hesitant. And it felt like there were moments throughout that second half where maybe he just hesitated, or there was someone slightly in his way, and he, you know, didn't throw the pass he would maybe throw under different circumstances with more confidence. I feel like the Kelce play, you know, on third and goal there from the 9 yard line kind of felt like that, where it was, okay, well, you know, that's a window, and it's a legit NFL window, but maybe it's not the perfect throw. Maybe it's not the wide open pass. Maybe I can make something better happen. And I felt like that was legit. And, you know, I feel like it wasn't as if the Bengals did something extraordinary to make that happen. It wasn't like they developed some, you know, new pressure concept no one's ever seen before, and it blew away Mahomes. But what they did worked. I think, you know, dropping eight and tackling well and not making mistakes did go a long way in that game. And I think the other thing I would say that comes to mind for me, you mentioned the running game. You know, I'm a big passing guy, obviously. I'm a big numbers guy. I always want to throw the ball. But there were spots in this game, like the third and three, for example, where the Bengals come out and they're in a 3-1-7 look. They have four front seven defenders out there. And that's like, okay, even if you have Patrick Mahomes, even if you want to throw the ball, like, you can probably run it in that spot. I would recommend running the ball in that situation. I think that's the tough part, is that it felt like, you know, what worked for them in the first half was working great. And then the second half, you know, when it stopped working, they didn't seem to have a counterpunch or a plan B.
So that third and three is a good example of what I mean by just kind of having a little bit of ability to adapt. So, you know, Andy Reid, I would imagine third and three this year has rushed the ball I mean, in non-four-man situations, seven times. I mean, I can't imagine, right? Like, that's just not what they do, right? They're going to pass the ball. And so you motion McKinnon back into the backfield. They're running the kind of hybrid man zone drop eight coverage, right? So, you know, they motion the back inside, the linebacker comes back inside. And so you have three down linemen, a linebacker, and the safety kind of started to drop down, but eventually I think backed out. So even if it's 5-on-5, I like my five offensive linemen against their five personnel that'll be in the box. And if you get an explosive run there, if you go 3rd and 3, you get 15 yards, let's say, the next 3rd and 3, the Bengals might not run that drop eight anymore, right? Guys, they might. And so it just takes one, it takes one time for that to be, you know, for one explosive run. And the Bengals, I would imagine, the next 3rd and 3, but hey, guys, just watch for that run, right? Just and maybe the safety's a little bit later dropping to the middle of the field. And maybe they're a little bit slower with their eyeballs to Kelce and whatnot. And that, I think, is the important part of being able to run the ball a little bit. Again, I'm with you. You can't make like the Bengals, for example. Zach Taylor had a terrible game plan, but somehow they survived it. Like, I don't know, it's good to run the ball 14 times on first down for like -2 yards, but obviously it worked in the end. And sometimes you just don't get rewarded for having a better plan. But that's, you know, those are things I think and Andy Reid has been great throughout his career of adapting, right? That's one thing that he has done, I think, better than any other coach. Why he continues to win. You can't be stubborn and be a good head coach. But this is one area where I think just having a little bit more options in some of these spots, whether it's Mahomes changing a play to a run, which I don't think they really ever do. But just having a little counterpunch with the physicality of your run game, I feel, on offense would be very helpful for the next year. They have a really good offensive line. Like that's like, it's not like they're the Bengals. I mean, Bill, I have a really hard time wrapping my head around this Bengals team. They allowed 59 pressures in 3 playoff games. Like, it's, as an offensive lineman, man, it is so hard to see them. Chiefs had 16 pressures. The Chiefs, our defensive line is, I mean, Frank Clark had one. It's not like Frank Clark was out there doing it.
Right.
And it's just hard for me to believe they're in this spot.
But they are. I mean, you know, I feel like, you know, we can acknowledge that they are a mess up front at times and they're sloppy and they make mistakes. And yet, because of Joe Burrow, because of how they played, because they come up with big plays at the right time, they are here. And I want to talk about the Bengals in a second, but I want to ask a couple more things about the Chiefs in terms of, number one, I looked up the numbers while you were talking, and you were too run heavy. You were too optimistic about Andy running the football. They have been 3rd and 3 when it's outside of a 10% win expectancy or a 90% win expectancy. It's basically every like normal play, every 3rd and 3, they've had 15 of them this year. They've run the ball one time, 1 out of 15. And Clyde Edwards, that went for 14 yards on that 3rd and 3. The one time they ran the ball this year. So you were too run heavy for Andy Reid and that offense. I feel like, you know, when it comes to this offense, I want to know what you think. Like you have been in the situation before, whether it's the Colts game or not, but one place or another, like when you're in a situation as a lineman where things are going great and the offense is kicking and the crowd's into it and everything's going great. And then things fall apart. And like for a quarter, you're a mess. Like, what does that feel like on the sidelines? What are you thinking? What are you going through?
Well, I remember the Colts game when Andrew Luck caught that fumble. And I thought to myself, like, I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss on this podcast. I was like, oh, we're not winning this game. You're just like, what is happening right now? What is happening? And of course, you go out and play hard. Look, and you know the fourth down play that that Alex threw in that game. I mean, Dwayne Bowe had a broken foot and like couldn't get his foot down in bounds because his foot like didn't function properly. Like it was just it's a completely different game.
Right.
But you start having this feeling of like, oh no. Yeah. I wonder if the Chiefs felt that way too. But then again, typically it just takes, and that's my point about the running the ball 3 times in a row, is that. Of course, you might get 7 yards and punt. I don't know. But like when you start doing that, it makes your whole team feel confident. And you need kind of a player to it. I actually thought the Snead interception was that play. I was like, oh, Interception. Okay, let's go offense. And they just never got that play. Yeah, that last drive that Kelsey had a big gain, I believe. You know, obviously the Pat had a couple scrambles. They get that first down. Mm-hmm. Even then, that third down, the shovel toss was like barely a first down. Like they were struggling to get yards. And they just never had that play on offense to click them back into being good again. And it's hard to parallel what we had in 2013 because we didn't have anyone healthy, right? We had, like I said, Dwayne Bowe was hurt. Donnie Avery got hurt in that game. We were down our third string running back. And you know, there was a play in that game, going back to 2013 again, where I think it was Cyrus Gray was at running back because Nile Davis had broke his leg and Jamal Charles had got concussed in the first drive. Yep. And we ran like a wheel route. And Cyrus is just not as fast. He's just not as fast as those guys. And it was a yard too long because Alex Smith had worked with Jamal Charles and Nile Davis on this route all season. And if Jamal's in the game, he catches it. He's faster than him. And like, you just, it's like one of those plays. Like if we catch that ball, we probably win that game. Right. And the Chiefs just kind of had the same thing where like Mahomes throws a bad pass on second and seven to a wide open running back. If they catch that ball, maybe they get 12 yards, break a tackle. Okay, here we go, guys. Let's go, right? We run the ball twice. Ooh, first down. Come on. And like they never really got that going. It sometimes takes a play or two. And a lot of times, though, this is why the importance of having a great quarterback, that falls on the quarterback, right? And it falls on Josh Allen and Pat Mahomes and Joe Burrow. And you know, Joe Burrow in that game made that play on third and six, right? He avoided Chris Jones and got a first down. He ran the ball when the Chiefs were silly enough to get out of their rushing lanes. I mean, the Chiefs just played bad the second half. But he made those plays, and Pat really didn't in this game. It's very unlike Pat to not make those plays. So I think that was the hard part for me, is there was never really that spark on offense that got them back. And they were there. I mean, even all of that being said, they were right there, first and goal at the five, with one of the best offenses in the NFL against a defense that, I mean, look, DVOA-wise, not terribly good. It's not like they, again, like everyone's like, oh, they sacked him four times. I mean, three of those sacks were like 9 seconds into the play. I mean, okay. I mean, sorry, we can't block for nine whole seconds when your quarterback is running everywhere. And the Chiefs just should have got in. They just didn't do it. And so the Bengals, the adjustment was great. But again, it wasn't, again, it's like drop eight coverage, man. It's what you do to air raid offenses. Like that's what's so shocking part of me. It was a drop eight with zone coverage. And they doubled Kelsey, they doubled Hill. Like there was a little bit of bracketing happening.
Yeah.
It's all it was.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it feels like there should have been opportunities there. There should have been adjustments made, and there weren't. One more question about the Chiefs, then we'll talk about the Bengals. In terms of like the aura around this team, I mean, we knew with Andy Reid, the reputation was the reputation. It was, oh, he can't win the big game. He can't win the championship game. He can't win the Super Bowl. He's always going to come up short. He's never going to do this or that. Never going to make the changes he needs to make. Great coach, but he's not Andy Reid. And then it felt like when Mahomes showed up, it was like, oh, that's fixed. You know, they did lose two times in the playoffs, but they lost when all other offensive linemen got hurt against the Buccaneers and the Patriots, a game where they came back and, you know, lost the coin toss and then lost in overtime, but a great game. They hadn't blown a lead like this in the postseason until we just saw this game here. And Mahomes, I mean, you know, we've seen him fail when, again, his entire offensive line has been hurt. That's been the one time you've seen him fail in a big game so far as a pro. So do you think this sort of pokes any holes in the Chiefs? Like, does it change their psyche? And is there anything that you feel like there's a long-lasting effect here for the Chiefs? Or is it just, hey, bad game, we'll be fine next year?
Well, a lot of it depends on how they mentally bounce back from it, right? I mean, it could be one. So, because you mentioned, I was talking to a Chiefs fan today, and they were like, yeah, I don't feel as bothered by this loss. I was like, I feel much worse than the other two losses because those were to Tom Brady. Like, this was to a team that, again, allowed 16 pressures and didn't really hit Mahomes all game. And again, didn't run a complicated defensive scheme. Mm-hmm. And this feels much worse again, because I think, you know, with the ever-changing landscape of quarterbacks in the AFC, nothing's a given every year, right? If this is an NFC team, I'd be like, all right, cool. Next year, we just get back and run it back. And it was it was the worst time for him to have the worst half of his career. It just happened in a big playoff game. And it could be nothing more than that. And I think with Mahomes' mentality, it will be nothing more than that. The question is whether or not the Chiefs learn from this, right? They've had 2 years now of sort of like a little bit of BS in the end of games, right? Where just yeah. like just kind of not putting teams away, and they're just not. And it didn't cost them last year because they got the Super Bowl, and they just, you can blame that loss on the poor offensive line in that game. But it didn't bite them this season that much because they were just bad on offense for about a month, and that was most of their issues. Mm-hmm. But now it's happened twice to the Bengals, and you know it happened last year a bunch. And so what do you do in the offseason to fix that, right? What does Andy Reid, does he change things? Does he change the way he operates at all? Does he put some new plays in there, new personnel as well? Does he change mm-hmm. his coaching staff? Which I don't think any of that's going to happen as far as the coaching staff. But like, what? How do you self-evaluate? And I've been on with six coaches. I've been with five during the regular season. Mm-hmm. And Andy Reid was the best coach I've had at self-evaluating. Like in the middle of season, bye week, like he gave us a rundown of what we're good and what we're bad at, and we just did what we're good at the rest of the season. So it's great. Mm-hmm. He's great at that. So now he has to evaluate how they get here, and then what do they do next year? Because they're going to win 10 to 12 games. Like they have Pat Mahomes. Sure. It's a matter of how do you avoid this specific thing happening again. And I go back to all this. Even all that being said, if Chris Jones sacks Pat Mahomes, if Hitchens or Bolden just – if they catch that second pass that Burrow threw right to the guy, right to the linebacker, catch mm-hmm. that ball, maybe the Chiefs. So they're not as bad as they played. They weren't that far off from even winning the game. So it's just, I think they'll be fine. Again, the roster is a big issue right now. You're going to have to get secondary pieces, a pass rush, probably mm-hmm. a bigger wide receiver possession type of guy. But Travis Kelce and Hill are 1 year older, right? Left tackle, I don't know if they're going to re-sign Brown. I thought Brown really improved throughout the season. I thought early in the year he struggled kind of figuring out his place in the mm-hmm. offense, considering he played a much different offense in Baltimore. But he played much better down the stretch. So there's some issues with the roster. But with Mahomes and Reed, you're going to win 10 to 12 games every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're in a position that I think a lot of teams would envy. But at the same time, like you mentioned a lot of stuff about, oh, you know, like if this little break had gone their way, that's 100% true. But also, like, we're one or two incredible plays at the end of that game last week, the Bills game, away from saying, oh, they blew, you know, the defense blew two leads late in football games. And you know, there's definitely issues with this team that have to be corrected, whether it's structurally, whether it's schematically, whether it's personnel-wise on both sides of the football.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With the Bengals, on the other hand, I mean, you know, I feel like the big story has been certainly that the Chiefs are the Chiefs lost more so than the Bengals won. I mean, you know, I don't know about you. I did not predict the Bengals were going to make it to the Super Bowl before the season. Shout out to you if you pull that off. But I mean, you know, like what, you know, what impresses you about this team having watched them play the last few weeks?
Well, they definitely have a confidence that no matter what happens, we have a chance to win the game. And that's very mm-hmm. hard for a young team to have. There's obviously some sort of swagger, confidence, whatever word you want to put on it. And I think it definitely is a Joe Burrow thing, right? He brought kind of the attitude to the team. And I mean, there is something to be said about not screwing it up, right? They haven't screwed it up, right? Like that's part of it as well. They haven't lost these games, right? Tennessee, you know, Ryan Tannehill didn't play well. You know, again, the second half of the Chiefs game, like, you know, Derek Carr, the Raiders were up and down in that game. The Bengals haven't done anything to lose games yet, which is important, right? You can force the opponent to make the mistakes, force the opponent to make errors, and you just capitalize off those errors. Mm-hmm. But it is odd, you know, in a year really in an era where offense rules. I mean, they've had 5 touchdowns in 3 playoff games. Mm-hmm. You know, their defense, how about this? Their defense, I saw the stats, kind of a one of those baseball stats, but
yeah,
you know, like the Bengals have had 3 that have forced 3 turnovers in the last minute or overtime of a 1-score playoff game, right? 3 in the last 3 weeks. That's one more than Tom Brady's teams did in 20 years of the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like it's Brady 2 in that situation and Joe Burrow 3. So I've had 3 straight weeks now of interceptions or turnovers forced in, you know, under a minute or an overtime of a playoff game.
That's wild.
That's not normal, right? And I go and so, but look, their defense again, their defense plays sound. They play sound defense. They're where they're supposed to be. They tackle well. But I do worry about their interior pass rush against the Rams, and their offensive line. I know Bengals fans hate me for saying this. It's going to matter at some point, Bill, that they can't block anybody. Like it's going to matter, and probably this weekend. Because guess what? Joe Burrow's not ducking under Aaron Donald's tackle, okay? And Von Miller is playing like he did in 2015. Like he's got this joy and this energy and this youth that I think just playing on a playoff team on turf, by the way, turf guys play a little faster on turf and on a defense where you can't double him. Who you can double Von Miller and leave Donald and Floyd open? And I just think it has to matter at some point. And the difference between the Chiefs and Titans is that the Rams have a good pass defense. This is the only, this is the Bengals have played only one team defense in the top 10 in DVOA all season. This is like by far the best defense they're going to play all year. Mm-hmm. And so I just think it has to matter at some point, Bill. It has to, right? I mean, are they going to allow 16 pressures to the Rams and win a Super Bowl game?
I mean, it just like I'm just trying to think, and maybe you know, you pay closer attention to offensive lines than just about anybody, but like where if the Bengals win the Super Bowl, which I don't think is out of the question by any means, they have the talent to play. Like would there have been a worse offensive line you can think of in recent memory to win a Super Bowl?
So people have tried to point out like the Giants like in 2011, but they had David Deal and they had Chris Snee, who's a perennial Pro Bowler. They had Kareem McKenzie, they had Will Beattie, who was young, I think, left tackle in that year, but like that's pretty good.
they were legit line.
David Bass played center, right, for that team, I believe. Yes. You know, and then you have what you have the next year was the Ravens, right? It was in 2012, I believe.
That was the year they traded for the dude who was on the Vikings, Bryant McKinney, right?
Yeah. So, like, they had a good offensive line. And you go to Broncos and Seahawks and Patriots. Like, they're all good offensive lines. And it has to, again, it has to matter at some point that they can't block it. There was the overtime, the last Mixon run, the one that we talked, that everyone discussed whether he was down or not. I thought he declared himself down. What did he fumble on? If they ruled it the other way, I would have been like, all right, well, I get it. He technically didn't get touched. Go watch that play back. It's a zone to the left. Okay. It's an outside zone. Mm-hmm. Typically, if there's front side penetration, the play is dead. Like it's just dead. Both the left guard and center are 4 yards in the backfield. Mm-hmm. And it's a 15 yard run. Every offense I played on, would that be a minus? That'd be a lot, you know, but they caved in. Jonah Williams, I think they had a big tight end caved in the left side of really Frank Clark, and it allowed Mixon to go. But typically when you bubble an outside zone like that, you're dead to rights. The play's over. Mm-hmm. And so stuff like that, where I don't think they can do that against the Rams. I don't think that's possible against that defense. You know, of course the worry, you know, if you're back in the Rams is Matt Stafford, right? It's like, he's played great. He did, you know, they did drop the arm punt on Sunday. But he's played really good. He's at 900 yards in 3 games.
Yeah.
Offense is working well. They run the ball well. Obviously, Whitworth getting 2 weeks to kind of get healthier. Left tackle will be huge for them against Hendrickson. Maybe I'm just a stubborn man, but the offensive line thing is so important to me. And you look at you know, where these teams and how these teams are winning over the years. I mean, you look at the 2018 Patriots, right? I mean, they just bludgeon people to death in the playoffs, right? Yeah. I mean, they weren't a collection of great talents. Like if you look at And, well, no, they know they had Tooney and Brown. Yeah, Tooney, Brown, and Andrews. Like, yo, never mind. Shaq Mason. Like, okay, yeah, they're great. You know what I mean? Like, every offense you point to, right? The Chiefs next year, Eric Fisher, my brother, last season, right? They had
the Bucks.
The Bucks O line's great. It's just hard to get to the spot and think that you're going to win a Super Bowl with the line. And it's worked so far. I get it. It feels hard to continue to believe in that.
Yeah, I mean, it matters. You know, at the very least, you can say even if they do win, it matters. And certainly, you know, you give credit to the stars they have. I mean, T. Higgins made a ton of great catches in this game, or a ton of big, tough catches over the middle in this game. Jamar Chase has been a difference maker. Joe Burrow's played great. Like, you know, like if you can duck one of the best defensive players in football and run for a first down, like that matters. That's legit. Joe Mixon made some good plays in this game. So, I mean, there's talent definitely on this roster that I think deserves a ton of credence at the weapon spots. But it does feel like there's going to be a bunch of situations in this game coming up where Joe Burrow is going to have to duck Von Miller or duck Aaron Donald, because there's going to be problems up front for the Bengals.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Let's talk about the Rams, actually. So Rams, 49ers. Big thing for me in this game, you know, we talk about the line of scrimmage and how much it matters. Look at the numbers for this game. The thing that stands out to me is just the Rams shut down the 49ers rushing attack. I mean, yeah. Deebo was 7 of 26. Elijah Mitchell, 11 for 20. Kyle Juszczyk had that one fullback belly where he got stuffed. I think it was 4th and 2. You know, they came up with the run stops when they needed to win this football game. And, you know, from what you saw, what happened? How are they able to slow down one of the league's most dynamic running games?
I feel like they got tired of us saying like the Niners continue to punk them in the line of scrimmage. But that, you know, like, you know, when everyone says something like, well, they've been, you know, their Shanahan owns McVay. And yeah. I would say, well, hey, okay. But I think where they win this game is in the trenches, right? The Niners offense, defensive lines win these games each week,
yeah.
Each time they play. And I feel like the Rams were like, nope, not going to happen this week. It's not going to happen. And, you know, Greg Gaines playing so much better, I think, the back half of the season. I think he's improved a lot this year. Has really helped that run defense, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that third down play, and just – and then Shanahan calls timeout and doesn't go for it. Or McVay, whoever called timeout, did go. Mm-hmm. It was so bad. I just think that they said, look, we're not going to lose this game because we don't stop the run. And they rightfully guessed that, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, it's hard to win a game with heat and with him being your offense. He made some good throws. Don't get me wrong. He did make some good throws. But that they decided, like, we're not going to let this happen. And if you're heading into this weekend, I think the idea is, like, just don't let Joe Burrow beat us, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I was, like, every time the Bengals ran the ball on Sunday, I was pumped. I'm like, sweet. Like, yes, one less rep for Joe Burrow. So I think they can carry that physicality over. And I do think there is something to – I know it was 2017 and people said, well, they barely beat the Niners. And yeah, but there is something to a little bit of ownage, right? There's a little mental mm-hmm. baggage there.
For sure.
And now that mental baggage is – I wouldn't be surprised next year if the Rams came out and kicked their ass twice next year, just because that stigma of that is over, right? Is that mm-hmm. that whole, like, they own us thing is over now. And I just thought they physically won that game in the trenches as they have. Their offensive line played much better than it did in week 18, especially mm-hmm. in the second half of that game of week 18. And obviously Whitworth getting back healthy would be very important in the next couple mm-hmm. of weeks. That's a big thing for them, obviously, for him to his knee to get two more weeks of rehab and rest and recovery and just get after it against the Bengals.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like the one weakness the Rams had blocking in this game was not the offensive line. It was the receivers. There were a couple moments in this game where it felt like, you know, they were asking Odell or asking Van Jefferson to kind of play either the Cooper Kupp or the Robert Woods role and come in and block a defensive lineman, or at least, you know, bother a defensive lineman long enough to get a run play to work. And it felt like they were getting blown up in that spot. You know, the Bengals have two pretty impressive edge defenders in Trey Hendrickson and Sam Hubbard. Do you feel like that's something that the Rams are going to struggle with, or is that maybe a one-week aberration given how good the 49ers are and how well-coached they are up front?
You know, it just depends on what their scheme is going to be, right? Because you can avoid those guys having to block, but they're in so much 11 personnel that it's, you know, it's always difficult. And with Higbee out, they might even be in more 11 personnel, which feels
really
impossible to be in. And yes, it's up to those guys to be able to just get in the way sometimes. And this is where Robert Woods was great, right? It was great at blocking, but I think there's ways around it, right? You know, you can obviously play action pass off a lot of those looks. You can ghost a lot of those guys where you fake to block them, and just that split second of them having a capture in their eyes has the running back able to get by them. Mm-hmm. There's ways to avoid that having to be an issue. And I'm curious to see how they do. Look, the Niners, again, they're just faster at linebacker. So when you than the Bengals are. So it makes it those blocks just much tougher. And I have 2 weeks to prepare. So maybe the Bengals are more keyed into what the Rams are going to do. But I think the Niners just have a good game plan against the Rams all the time too. It's part of what, you know, and I think they put themselves in situations where they want to be blocked by those wide receivers. And I think this game, McVay will figure out a way to not have that be such a big issue. The thing about it, Bill, one thing I've realized with McVay and with all these coaches, doesn't it feel like we watch these games more on Twitter together as football fans, like all these coaches have the same issues with game management, right?
Yeah.
They all do. Like, who is good at game management? Who would Twitter decide is good at game? No one. No one's good at game management. So, you know, McVay had no challenges, no timeouts with 10 minutes left.
Okay.
I trust in the game plan. I think the game plan's fine.
Yeah.
It's a matter of everything else. Like, he just has terrible challenges all season.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, and, you know, I feel like we, because we trash them so much, like the average coach when it comes to game management is probably a lot better than we think, just because the opposite. The average coach is probably pretty bad just because we feel like, you know, there's maybe two guys like Staley and to some extent John Harbaugh who people have faith in. But because 16 or 17 guys are abysmal, it feels like maybe we're too harsh on them. Maybe that's not going to matter quite as much just because, you know, it's not like Zach Taylor has a great reputation as a game manager or managing the clock and stuff. I mean, the stuff they did at the end of the Chiefs game in week 17, that was like the rare opportunity where the analytics people were like, no, don't go for it. like kick dudes, the numbers say kick. You know, I feel like it's not always, it matters, but like in this game, for example, Sean McVay had two terrible challenges, you know, timeout usage was abysmal. And because Kyle Shanahan on the other side was very conservative in those situations on fourth down, it felt like it didn't matter all that much. In terms of Shanahan, you know, trying to get into his mindset as someone who is, you know, so focused on the run game, such a creative play caller, someone who has all these weapons. Like, what do you think it is about Kyle Shanahan, or what do you think he's thinking that leads him to not be aggressive in these situations? Because we saw it in the Chiefs game a couple of years ago in the Super Bowl. We saw it earlier this postseason against the Cowboys, and we saw it here against the Rams. Like, why is Kyle Shanahan not more aggressive when he has his opportunities to run forward and, you know, seal up games on fourth and short?
Well, there's two things here. One is that you can make the argument that he's just even though he's young in age, he's just a football guy. Like, he grew up around the game. And a lot of those older coaches are conservative, right? That's kind of what they are. I mean, Mike Tomlin, Andy Reid. I mean, Andy Reid's gotten better with Pat Mahomes. Before Pat Mahomes, I mean, heck, Andy Reid didn't go for it ever on a fourth down? You know, Belichick has been off and on aggressive, right? Kind of depends on whose quarterback is and what the year is and how he feels. But some of the older coaches just tend to not be very aggressive. And Shanahan, even though he's young, he grew up in the game. Like, he spent 40 years around the game where everyone said, all right, punt, kick a field goal, punt, kick a field goal, punt, kick a field goal, play defense, get the ball back, go down and score.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the game has changed a little bit. We have numbers that support doing it a different way. And two, and they might be or 1A, 1B, is I don't think he trusts Jimmy Garoppolo. And I'm curious to see next season with Trey Lance, if that changed at all. Because, for example, like Andy Reid, the best thing Mahomes ever did for Andy Reid was force Andy to be more aggressive, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's still not that aggressive, but it's much better than he used to be. Mm-hmm. And if Trey Lance is better, then maybe Shanahan feels more comfortable in fourth and two going for it. But he's like, look, I have my defense, or I have Jimmy Garoppolo. Who am I choosing to make a stop? He chose his defense, who had been good all season, right? I mean, I understand the decision.
Yeah,
that's what it comes down to, in my opinion. One is he's probably a little bit conservative with his view of football. And two, it's just he doesn't trust his quarterback. And there's many instances all year where he doesn't trust him. And there's some that make sense, some that I think I disagree with. Mm-hmm. But fourth and two, like, you should have a play for Jimmy Garoppolo where you feel comfortable him moving the ball down the field enough for you. But he obviously didn't.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I... am a smart aleck sitting on the sidelines, and I don't think the way coaches think. But to me, and maybe it was too late because of the NFC Championship game, but I was always surprised that as the season went on, that we didn't see the stuff we saw early in the year where they had Trey Lance on the bench, and he was a guy they could have used in short yardage. They used him in the red zone early in the year. And then I think Kyle Shanahan said it took him out of his rhythm and or as a play caller, and so he stopped using him. But, you know, are you surprised that they weren't using him moving up to the NFC Championship game so that they needed him on a 4th-and-2, they could have the threat of having Trey Lance as a running threat?
I'm kind of against the 2-quarterback system.
Really?
I get its purposes. But like, when has it really worked very well? How many teams are successful running a 2-quarterback system at any point in the season? I mean, it works every now and then, but like, you should also just have a plan 4th-and-2 that Jimmy Garoppolo can execute and not have to bring in Trey Lance, right? You have a different snap. You're on the road. You bring in a rookie quarterback on 4th-and-2 in a playoff game with 8 minutes left, and the snap count's different. The play call is different, different vibe, different feel with a different quarterback in there. I just never been a fan of that. And so I'm fine with him going. Now, I get its purposes during the season, maybe once or twice. I mean, I guess once or twice, but then you have to also have to spend time in practice with limited practice reps, working on a package that you might run 2 plays in all week. And that's a lot of time you could be spent doing something else that get you prepared to have your starters playing. So I understand why he didn't want to do it. And again, I'm not really, you won't see me arguing very much for 2-quarterback systems. I don't think that it's very viable. And especially in a playoff game like that. I mean, can you imagine if Andy Reid was like, you know what, we're going to put in our speedier backup quarterback. I mean, like, what are you doing? Right. Even though it's Jimmy Garoppolo, I just think in that spot, you're like, I mean, can you imagine if you put Trey Lance in there and Trey Lance like fumbled? Oh my God.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. And certainly it feels like they can run the ball effectively without Trey Lance. They can certainly have a run concept that works with Jimmy Garoppolo as their quarterback. And I know they did get stuffed in a couple of plays, but like, you don't give up on the running game because you get stuffed a couple of times. With Garoppolo, in terms of 2022, obviously, you know, the last play is not going to look very well. If teams look at the final snap, it's not going to look very impressive, but certainly, I mean, a relatively healthy season by his standards. He did play through a couple of injuries, but a guy who has been in, you know, generally friendly situations with the Patriots and now with the 49ers. What do you think his trade value is going to be, if any, and where do you think he ends up playing in 2022?
I mean, he's a good bridge quarterback, right? If you are the Saints or Bucks, you're just trying to maybe get by for one more year. But I could also argue just being bad for those teams is better because you get a better draft pick in 2 years. Sure. There's going to be someone that can convince themselves that he's the missing piece, I would imagine. I don't know who that's going to be. But their suit, again, he's his numbers. I mean, his EPA, right? His CPO, whatever, CPOE, right? Like that's like, he's all top five, right? If I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. It doesn't match up with what my eyes might see or what games I watch him play, but there is some value in him. He's not a bad quarterback. He's just not great. I mean, the idea is like, can you win a Super Bowl with him? Probably not. Can you be competitive? Of course you can. But if you're one of these middling teams, I can make the case that being bad for a year is worse than being competitive without winning a Super Bowl.
I mean, you know, like I would say you'd rather have a better quarterback to win a Super Bowl, but I mean, I've seen Joe Flacco win a Super Bowl. I've seen Nick Foles win a Super Bowl. And I saw Jimmy Garoppolo come within one deep pass of winning a Super Bowl. So I would say it's tougher, but I don't think it's impossible by any means to win with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Like I could see someone like Washington going for Jimmy Garoppolo, right?
Ron Rivera, total sense to me.
A veteran coach, wants a veteran player. He knows exactly what he's getting with Jimmy Garoppolo. Rivera can say, hey, look, man, we're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball. We're going to play action pass. We're going to limit our opportunities for Jimmy Garoppolo to get in bad situations. And we're going to try to win with that in that division. Like that feels like just the mentality of knowing Ron Rivera. Like that feels like a place that would certainly welcome a veteran quarterback like Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, like it's so funny because it feels like so much of talking about Jimmy Garoppolo is talking about what other people say about Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, no, he's not one of the 5 best quarterbacks in football, even though his numbers might say that at times. And no, he's not total trash being carried to win after win by the running game and Deebo Samuel. There's probably some truth to both those things. Like he's probably better than he looks because they do hit so many chunk plays off play action, and he's probably not as good as he looks because he has incredible weapons making plays for him. But like, he gets the ball to the right place typically. He is, you know, he is accurate, certainly for stretches. I think he was not maybe all that accurate in this game just because he had, you know, he's playing through an injury. The injuries matter. And he's making, you know, good money at this point, not top tier quarterback money. I think if your expectations are appropriate, he's a useful player. And I think that, you know, if he gets traded for a first round pick, I think we'll see maybe some loftier expectations. But I think if it's more realistic, if it's a conditional pick, you know, in the 2-3 range, I think it's going to be, you know, probably pretty decent value for a team like Washington that might only be a quarterback away from being a playoff contender.
Especially with this quarterback class not being that great, right? I mean,
right.
There's a lot of teams going to miss out on opportunities for quarterbacks, or just say, hey, you know, we'll pass for next year. And if you're Washington, you know, specifically, like, do you really want to draft, you know, who's a you know, Carson Strong, or would you rather just take Jimmy for a year and then focus on Bryce Young and next year, whoever else is going to be next year's draft, right? Caleb Williams still has two more years, but you know, whoever it is, you just focus on you know, winning now with Jimmy G, and then, you know, whoever you know quarterback a couple of years is when you pick. Well, I could see that be an option for a lot of teams. If you're Tampa Bay, and you think to yourself, hey man, we can, you know, we just had Tom Brady,
right?
You know, maybe we just get ourselves, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo. We run back a lot of the pieces, and we have an opportunity in a weak NFC South to get, you know, to get back to the playoffs, because every team feels the same way. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs, we have a chance, right? I mean, we have 2-4 seeds in the Super Bowl. Like, this, there's no better year for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, you know what? I have a question for you. Let's finish on this, because I'm not a former NFL player. I didn't go through the draft process. You did. So I want to ask you this question. Kenny Pickett went to the Senior Bowl and did not have his hand measured, and said that he did not want to have his hand measured because he has a double jointed thumb and he's doing hand exercises to prepare himself for the combine. Did you do any hand exercises to prepare yourself for the combine? And if you did not, do you regret not doing hand exercises to prepare for the combine?
I have giant hands, Bill. That was my problem. Was my giant stomach and trying to make sure that's giant for the combine. So my goal during combine training was losing weight. And I got to Indianapolis and I basically starved myself for like 2 days before weigh-in. So I could weigh as little good for the weigh-in. That was my problem. My problem was my hands are like 11 inches. Like, I have giant hands. It's about the stomach, the old, I guess now the weigh-ins aren't televised anymore. I think I saw this year. So no more weirdly gawking at other men's bodies in front. That's the oddest thing, man. Like, you're standing in front of, you know, 100 scouts, mm-hmm. you know, super serious, right? Like, this is their job. Their job is to identify, look at your body, make it, you know, make their comments on it. And like, you just take it as normal. So you're just there. You take your, you know, you take your top off, you're wearing tights only, you walk on the scale. You know, Jeff Schwartz, you know, 6'6" and a half, or, you know, 6'6", you know, 0'5". And they're like, all right, 331 pounds, you know, hand 10 7/8". You know, then they're like, you have to do a squat, if I recall, to kind of see how your ankle flexion is. And then you do like another thing. And then they're like, all right, and you move on to the next person. It's awkward, but everyone's just there. This is like a business event, right? Like, everyone's just like writing their notes, and there's no weird glances, no odd, like, it's more odd for the player, I think, than for the adults who are just writing the data down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a weird, and I guess that's not televised anymore now. So that's unfortunate.
It just seems strange to me. Like, I've never understood it. Like, I know that, like, the scouts are there to do their jobs. I find it hard to believe that they are so good at judging bodies that they can, you know, pick between, you know, pick between two slightly different bodies when it comes to that stuff. I'm skeptical, but that's another story for another day.
I think it's more to make sure, like, a guy's not like sloppy put together. Like, you don't really want sloppy bodies.
But I'm sure you can think of an offensive lineman or two who had a sloppy body and managed to make it work for them.
That's never all offensive linemen are magical creatures that never have any sloppy bodies. We're all perfect in every way.
There you go. That is the perfect response to finish up here. Jeff Schwartz, a man about town, a man who does work for many places. Jeff, please plug all the places people can check out what you do.
So my podcast, Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. It comes out on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Obviously, it's progressing the off season. We'll have some more off season news to do. On my radio show, Pac-12 Today, Monday through Friday. I'm sure there's a lot of listeners of yours that are really interested in Pac-12 sports. You'd find that on SiriusXM 373. And then I write for Fox Sports as well. Do some gambling stuff for them as well. So I stay busy. I like covering ball. College and NFL, it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Schwartz, tremendous follow on Twitter. Check him out. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Bill.
All right, thanks so much, as always, to my friend and the excellent NFL analyst, Jeff Schwartz. Check him out at all those various places he just mentioned. We'll be back next week, of course, previewing the big game, previewing the Super Bowl. Final game of the year, Rams-Bengals. I did not see this one coming. I saw Rams, I think I had Rams-Chiefs before the year, so halfway there. But we'll have a lot to talk about. I'll be writing a preview, of course, for ESPN.com and talking about the game next week and the following week. So hope you guys are excited about the final game of the NFL season. And we'll be back next week to preview Rams-Bengals.